It is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Well, you know, for people who have been here since the beginning, it's now finally the ninth inning for two people on this show today, myself included.
Time is running out
really quickly.
Do the Yankees have a rally in their bones?
Yeah, I'm Maddie Bamonte. I'm here with Brian Raybax and Lou Orlando for mine and Brian's last Nosebleeds probably ever.
Wow. Probably.
Probably ever, because you never know.
Maybe, we don't know for sure.
We don't know for sure because, you know, we could always fifth year. Mm-hmm. If the Mets ever win the World Series, maybe I'll come back on.
Yeah.
That would be huge.
That would be, right?
Yeah. But they're not. So instead, today is my last day here at the station.
That's the optimism.
Well, you know, there's not... You see what we're working with. It's not good.
Hey, Christian Scott. That guy.
That guy.
We're probably going to talk about him later. Listen, I think you're selling yourself a little short here with the Mets World Series odds. I mean, hey, why not? They have a lot of talent now. Right?
Speaking of talent,
you're wearing a Mets hat.
Speaking of talent,
someone is missing today.
Wouldn't the show just be so much better if there was, you know, one person here instead of me, maybe?
So,
if there was a William Talent here, wouldn't that make everything better?
I mean,
better?
Yeah, I guess I may have said a few things that got a little misconstrued
in the media.
Hyper-extenuated.
That's a great word. That's a great word, Maddie.
Great turn of phrase.
Yeah, I mean... I would have liked if Will Talent was here. I did actually request.
Maybe we'll call him.
Maybe
at the end of the show. Maybe we'll give him a ring.
Maybe he'll call in.
Ooh,
now,
you know what?
Now that's something.
I'll text him.
Maybe. Text him. See what
he's
doing. I would really like him here because, you know, you're good, but like, not necessarily.
Like, we just had such a good episode with him 2 weeks ago that we just had
to run it back.
We need to run it back.
No, but I'm serious.
Hey, if
every
it's not
episode,
broke, don't fix it.
Every episode that I do with him, I have a great time. And you know what? We just haven't had the chance to get on air on these types of shows together,
Lou.
It's just out of my repetition.
What it really shows you is that this new regime that's taken over at the station, they just don't have a feel for the way things are going.
No.
And I think it's a sign that things are going to depreciate very quickly.
You have to look at the intangibles here. Like, what does Will Talent bring to the table that necessarily someone like Lou Orlando, who has all those skills and technical ability necessary, like, what does he bring that goes beyond the playbook? That's what I want to know.
And we're gonna find out today. That was a great intro, by the way, guys.
Was it good or better than the debate of how to do the YMCA?
Nothing
was better than that.
Which it is still the C clockwise.
You're wrong.
You've never been. My mom told you that you were wrong.
Okay, well.
And that's Jennifer Kennedy Orlando.
Is she the judge and jury for all YMCA practices? I don't think so.
But that doesn't mean you are.
Well.
If she's not, you're definitely not.
I have some. I've been to a lot of Yankee games in my day.
Oh, listen.
Oh,
you've watched a lot of YMCAs in your day. You've made it a point to watch the YMCA instead of like visiting your friends. Making their day. I don't know.
Little guilty.
It was really rude. We're not gonna keep on this, but I'm gonna keep on this for a second. Of you to be really mean to me this week about that. Because I used to do it the wrong way, and then I changed my ways.
A friend told you to change.
There's video evidence of you doing it the wrong way.
But I changed my ways.
I just wanted to defend myself
here. Because
here
at FUV, we learn from our mistakes. Yeah. We learn to grow and be better. We're always striving for more.
And you took that as an opportunity on my birthday to be mean to me like that.
Wow. I didn't do it on your birthday. I was mean to you months later, so it doesn't count.
It's even better.
Whatever, man. Okay.
Let's get on with the show.
Let's just get on with the show.
Fine.
You know what? It's my show. So we're going to start with the Mets. Now, the what's so funny, guys? The Mets were swept by the Rays, which was not fun. Then they went to St. Louis. They won two games there. Then the rain won game three, so we didn't play it. But there's more to talk about in regards to here. Let's talk about Christian Scott first.
Hmm.
He's been making some headlines. He started recently and just did really good for what we're dealing with in this Mets kind of lineup of pitchers. He had 18 swing and misses. They were the most by a Mets starter this season. He got 8 of them on his fastball, all in the strike zone, which was, dare I say, very impressive. And the problem is what we're going on with the flexibility in this rotation. It has not looked good. Specifically, Adrian Hauser looks horrific. A lot of these pitchers are not going very long. Aside from, normally Quintana doesn't go very long. He went very long on the day I decided to go, which was great to see.
Nice of him.
Very nice of him to do that. The bullpen looks pretty good, to be honest with you. But
Reed
this
Garrett.
Yeah, but this starting rotation does not look good. And Scott has been compared to a la Jacob deGrom in his youth.
Take it a little easy on the Jacob deGrom comparisons. I read an Athletic article in The Athletic before this that was like, hey, the last prospect that was kind of unheralded that rose through the ranks quickly that pitched this well in his debut was Jacob deGrom.
You know, like, he actually pitched better than Jacob deGrom.
Let's cool the deGrom, the two-time Cy Young Award winner, best pitcher of like this generation when he was healthy. Let's cool those comparisons after start number one. That's just what I think.
Why can't you just let him be excited a little bit?
Well, we can be excited. He pitched very well. He went 6 2/3. He gave up one run. He had 6 Ks. We mentioned the swing and misses. He got out of a nice jam in the first inning, mm-hmm. and from that point on, he was excellent. I just think that the DeGrom comparisons, it's not fair to him if he doesn't.
It's not. It's unfair expectations.
Right?
He's a young guy.
That's what I'm saying. But he looked very good. I will say that. Now, is he going to do the same thing at the Atlanta Braves this weekend?
That's tough.
I'm not sure because the Atlanta Braves.
City Field debut, though.
Yeah.
Of the fans behind
him. Mm-hmm. But the Atlanta Braves, they're very good. They have a talented offense. Really not a lot of holes in that lineup. So, I don't know. I guess we'll see how he does this weekend. But, again, on Saturday against the Rays, he looked good. And you know what? Mets fans should be encouraged because the rotation has had some funkiness where Hauser hasn't been getting the job done this year, like he mentioned. So if Scott can give himself a nice stretch here where he can get a prolonged stretch of nice starts, he could earn his way into like a really nice spot in that rotation and just kind of be a nice middle piece there. Especially when Kodai Senga comes back, there could be a couple good pieces, especially if Severino keeps pitching the way that he does.
I would love to get – I'm really excited to tell this to Maddie and our producer Grace McCarron, who are both – Mets fans. I found an NJ.com article written by Jimmy Haskup that said that a Mets amateur scouting director said the decision to draft Christian Scott was influenced by the success of Tyler McGill.
And
so I don't know how that makes you guys feel, but again, listen, anyone that makes it to the major leagues and stays consistently, like, you've already beaten the odds, but they said that the decision to draft Scott was very influenced by the success of McGill and the fact that they're both heavy strike throwers. So I'm curious, Maddie, how do you feel about the next Tyler McGill?
I feel better than if he just completely collapses his arm and becomes the next injured Jacob deGrom, to be honest with you. So,
you know, Jacob deGrom's not a Met anymore. Tyler McGill is.
No,
so.
I know, but we're comparing him to Jacob deGrom constantly. I would just prefer if Christian Scott does not end up with a glass arm in the next 3 years and just can't throw anything ever again.
He's not your problem anymore, though.
I know he's not my problem anymore, but I'm still going to talk about him like he's my problem because
okay.
We have nothing else going on. Anyway, point is, I don't mind the comparison. I quite like McGill for all of his faults. When the season was originally starting, I thought he was going to be my contender for being opening day starter, as he was a year or two prior when the whole DeGrom-Verlander thing collapsed. Or Scherzer-Verlander thing.
Go.
Yeah, sorry. Still talking about him. He just lives rent-free in my mind.
I guess.
That collapsed, and then McGill was starter, but then he wasn't this year. So I was like, oh, that's a little interesting. But I don't know. I don't mind the McGill comparison just because of I think there's just more to work with McGill. My issue going forward really has to do with, like, other people in this rotation. Adrian Hauser, I really want him off this team. I can't watch him anymore. I don't even want him in the bullpen. I don't even think he will be a good reliever at this point, considering I was more impressed by, it was like Diekman and Ottavino pitched yesterday that were really good. Reed Foley has been good. Diaz rebounded after he got his first blown save in like 2 years, which albeit 2 years in his time is like a little different because he was out for the season and all that stuff. But
it's still gone a long time without seeing a Diaz blown save.
And you know, so for me, I'd really not even want him to even fall into that bullpen role because of how much I like it right now. I don't know. This whole rotation has just been a problem for a while. And it's not, I really think they got to offload somebody before the deadline to really just make me feel better.
Well, listen, that guy has got to be Hauser. I mean, he hasn't gotten the job done. He's very expendable, especially when you have Kodai Senga waiting in the wings to come back at some point in the middle of the season. So if Christian Scott can propel himself, like I said, to that spot where he can stay in the rotation, then maybe if you move Hauser to the bullpen, he'll have more success. And then I think if you have Quintana as your five, that's pretty solid. So it could put the rotation in a better spot if Scott can continue to have the elite, like, mm-hmm. swing and miss stuff that he looked like he had this past weekend.
Well, I mean, let me float this out there, because the big thing I've been saying with the Mets, and I know you're in a wild card spot right now, but with Cohen saying that the winning window really opens next year, that this year to me is a really cool year where you can be competitive, but you also have the flexibility to try things out, and that's why, like, very game on, give Beatty a full year, find out what you have. I am so big on give Buddha and now Christian Scott, give them a run, let them eat in the rotation. Mendoza's already shown that even like the proven MLB veterans that you have, even on the offensive side, he's fine sitting them at times, limiting their playing time. We'll get into that a little bit more. What's the harm in giving guys like Buddha and Scott run? Like, to me, I would say, you know, you're already winning games with them and you're having success with them, that even when you get guys like Senga back, like, there's no reason to take these guys out of the rotation. I know you only have five spots. Honestly, even if the Mets move to a six-man rotation, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. Like, keep these guys in the mix. Find out what you have. That's the great spot that you guys are in that a lot of the contenders aren't, is that you have a little bit of flexibility to run. I'm like, all right, if it gets a little bumpy, they'll probably, Buddha and Scott will be better for the long term if you give them this run. Like, I think back to years like what Seve was able to get with the Yankees when, right before they hit the winning window, when he was able to get run, like, 2017, the Yankees ended up being ahead of the curve with what Judge did and what Seve did, and it expedited the process, but you got them full years, and even if 2017 wasn't a big year for the Yankees, like, Seve was going to pitch that whole year, Judge was going to get a full year of run, the Mets should take that same mentality, and it might end up in a postseason berth, but to me, I think there's value, legitimate value, in giving these guys runs, and even if it means that if you fall just short of the playoffs, there's way more long-term value than keeping Adrian Hauser, who's in a one-year, $5 million deal. So whether that's trading him, DFAing him at the deadline, I honestly think that, and Maddie, you'll know this, Mets pitching always gets hurt. It's always better to keep more pitching than you need on hand. So I'd be, I think, against, especially at this point, trading Hauser. You have no idea what Senga's going to look like when he comes back, so the more arms you have, the better. But, yeah, there's no reason to force these guys out of the rotation, even when you get some of the healthier arms back.
And it's so interesting, too, when you look at last year compared to this year, and they're both in very similar situations, both teams, at this point in the season, where they're hovering around 500, and this year it's looked at as a positive because the expectations, we didn't really know what the Mets were going to do. And obviously last year there were World Series expectations. So yeah, when you look at someone like Christian Scott or Jose Buddha, Buddha's shown a lot of talent so far.
He's looked good.
And obviously when you look at Scott and what he did in his first start against a good, capable lineup in the Tampa Bay Rays, I think there's a lot of opportunity for the Mets to really see, do we have something here? Because then if you look at a Senga or a Buddha or Christian Scott, you're looking at three starters that you're kind of like taking in kind of like within your own system. I know Senga's not really the case, but he was a rookie last year who started with the Mets. So it's really interesting. The Mets could build themselves a much solid foundation, and they still do have good prospects waiting in the wings after the Verlander and Scherzer trades from last year. So I'd say I kind of agree with you, Lou, to just let them get some run and just see what you have. And so far, they're winning games, so they're maintaining competitiveness in the wild card race while doing so.
Well, I think what gets interesting if we talk about this six-man rotation, if we just look ahead to the next series after this against the Phillies at home when they come back, the way it's set up right now is Minaya would pitch on Monday and then Buto would pitch on Tuesday. But then Wednesday, if we're looking at this six-man, that opens up to, is Hauser going to pitch, or Quintana pitches on four-day rest, or you pick somebody back up a la Joey Lucchese. Mm-hmm. I am less – he pitched Wednesday, I think, with Syracuse. But the only thing is I really think Lucchese hasn't drawn much interest this year from the front office in terms of being called up at all in this regard, so I really don't think it's going to be him. I will be interested to see if they decide to do Quintana, only because he did really well when I saw him, but he does not fare well on short rest at all. Like, he does not pitch well. I mean, albeit he's only done it like very few games, but when he does, he's given up almost like 10 runs like doing it. My other concern too is I feel like if you go into doing a Quintana start at that point, I don't think you're going to get the random 8-inning game that I saw out of him. You're going to get like 5 innings, and then so you have to rely on that bullpen for the entire game at that point. I don't know what they're going to do in terms of Wednesday now that they have all these in the rotation. Against the Braves, it'll be Quintana, Scott, Severino in that order. That starts Friday. But one other thing they're doing when we talk about switching people up in this lineup and everything is the reduced role we're really seeing out of Harrison Bader as of late. So he's been out of the starting lineup for 3 of the Mets' last 5 games. He was supposed to play center yesterday, and then the game got postponed. And they have decided to switch, Carlos Mendoza has decided to switch to DJ Stewart and Tyrone Taylor, who are just hitting much better. Stewart hitting mainly right-handed, and Taylor pretty like fair across the board. Bader has been fine, but compared to the rest of the Mets outfielders, is the worst out of all of them in terms of hitting. That does not speak for his defensive skills, which have been good, but he has been played less, and he's not been the biggest fan. He feels a little bit disgruntled by, you know, you sign a contract, you want to play, you're not given the playing time. But when you bring guys in like Tyrone Taylor, who we saw in spring training and we knew were going to be a big threat in this lineup, to give him that playing time, I don't know if Bader realizes that there is a lot of flexibility in terms of what's going on playing time. It's not very like cohesive in terms of you're going to get this 100% of the time, all the time. I mean, we saw Pete Alonso didn't even play first the other day. They had DJ Store playing first. Like, there's a lot of flexibility, I think, Mendoza's going about this lineup across the board, that I don't know if Harrison Bader has fully bought into that whole mindset that he's going with.
I'm going to try not to read into the quotes too much, because I know a lot of it is Harrison Bader was asked the question, and the response probably isn't meant to be like in a complaining sense that, like, why am I not playing type thing. But I mean, I get that he signed the contract and he wants to be a part of the team, but, or at least in a starting role, but he's mainly, it's been understood, I think, that he was brought here to be mainly a defensive guy. He's a glove first player who can provide some sparks and nice stretches as a hitter, but overall, in his career, he's always been a below-average hitter, career OPS plus of 92, and then you look back to when he was with the Yankees last year, the big thing for him was that his splits were horrible. He was really good against lefties, 343, 1. OPS against lefties, and then against righties, 208, 510 OPS, and this is with the Yankees. He ended up going to the Reds, and his splits were similar, but either way, there's still just a lot of, like, there's not a lot of incentive for Carlos Mendoza to put him in against a right-handed pitcher when he's never really been that great of a hitter to begin with. And there's a lot of talent in the outfield that we talk about. You already have Brandon Nimmo and the Starling Martes, but then you also have the DJ Stewarts and the Tyrone Taylors. it's just I'm not surprised to see Harrison Bader's coming in like every three games, and he got I think two games played in the Cardinals series. He started might have started one. He came in as a defensive replacement, but either way, I'm like not surprised that Harrison Bader has the role that he has. I'm sure he'd like more, but with the Mets, I think they're utilizing him fine. I'm not really seeing the issue, and I'm confused why it's like becoming a story.
Here's the quote from Mendoza. He said, I know they're not happy about it because they all want to play. And he's talking about managing the outfield. He's like, but they're all going to play. And I think you'll see this platoon happen, honestly, through the deadline. Unlike Hauser, I do think Harrison Bader is someone the Mets should really look into moving at the deadline. I do think he'll have a role in the coming months because, you know, there's always ebbs and flows with the offense. Who knows if Tyrone Taylor and DJ Stewart are going to keep hitting at a high 700s OPS level. Where I fall on Harrison Bader is that, again, this is not someone that I think you need to give, like Beatty or something, like that you need to give extended run to find out what he is. We know what Harrison Bader is. I think he's an incredible asset for a contender that needs an elite defensive center fielder that can hit lefties. Honestly, you look at the Braves, a lineup that stack that doesn't need much help offensively, but I think could use another bat that hits lefties when you look at, like, Michael Harris is their center fielder. He's a lefty. Kelenic's a lefty that maybe they could use another bat to hit against starting left-handed pitchers. That Bader's a guy that I think probably should get moved at the deadline because I do think a contender would really value from having his glove. I still think he's one of the best defensive outfielders in the game, and he's a valuable asset for a contender that needs what he brings to the table. A bottom-of-the-lineup guy in a lineup that's already stacked, he's going to give you so much value. For a Mets team that feels like the last few years we've talked about, they don't have enough bats at the bottom of the lineup, Bader is going to be a guy that works out of the lineup when the Mets aren't hitting 1-9. And so I think Mendoza will be doing a disservice if he plays Bader every day when you have Stewart and Taylor hitting the way they are, that Bader would honestly have more value and become more beloved in a team that doesn't need him to hit. That was my thing with the Yankees, was that he would not have been hated if he was on, like, the 2019 Yankees. That was, their offense was stacked, and they just needed a little bit more defense. For this team, I just don't know if he's the right fit for them long-term, again, whether or not they're a contender. Bader's a guy I think they should move, and maybe the next couple months will be tough on him because there is a world where I think he's a starting outfielder somewhere. It just might not be this team, and that's not something he's going to be happy about. He shouldn't be happy about it. I'm glad he answers honestly. He has every right to do that. Yeah, I just think that this is a guy they probably should look to move at the deadline because I think especially offensively, there's too many moving pieces. I've come around on, I understand why they sent Vientos down because Vientos is going to be in the same spot where if he's not getting everyday reps, I mean, he crushed it in the three games that he played. But if he's not getting everyday reps, then at least let him get the everyday reps in the minors. But if there's not space to give Vientos run, like, are you going to move earth and heaven to get Bader in the lineup every single day? There's almost too many guys that you want to get looks in this Mets lineup right now that Bader's in such a tough spot. Mendoza's in a really tough spot. I think he's handling it well right now. I'm not sure where Bader fits into this team long-term. I know it's a one-year deal, and to me, he feels like a guy they move on from at the deadline.
I agree with that, and I think the thing, and I don't want to like assume really at the end of the day what Bader interprets by anything, kind of like what you're saying, Brian. I think what I took away, which was what Mike Puma said that Mendoza told him, so like a he said, she said moment, is that it's not even the fact that Bader is performing the way he's performing. It's just that Stewart and Taylor are outperforming what that was expected of them. That's what it is at the end of the day. Like, these two guys have come in and they exceeded expectations and they're getting rewarded. Bader is just meeting those expectations. He is being good defensively. He was not, like we talked about, expecting to be this like big hitter in the lineup. He's just there. And that's honestly what it is at the end of the day. And it does suck for him that he doesn't get that, but it's kind of just the almost the bright light, at least for the Mets, that they have a bunch of these guys that are able to sub in and out and to do all this because injuries are going to happen. Marte's not going to be healthy the entire year. So there is time to be made up somewhere in this outfield that anybody can move around and be around. And I think that works well.
Listen, it was a smart move, I think, to bring Bader in. You had no idea what DJ Stewart was going to give you this year. You had no idea what Tyrone Taylor was going to give you this year. So you at least had the baseline of a very professional outfielder that can give you, I'd say, professional at-bats, but it's not going to wow you. Listen, as we saw from the postseason 2 years ago, he's a guy that can get hot, and when he gets hot, he can hit right-handed pitchers, and mm-hmm. he can be an electric bat. Unfortunately, those flashes feels like they come few and far between, or just sparingly, rather than, like, that's not him consistently.
Right.
And so it's a nice guy to have as insurance, or just, hey, if anyone goes down or if those bats aren't working, I think you feel comfortable with him in the bottom of your lineup. But, hey, it's a good problem to have. You have Taylor and Stewart hitting above average. And unfortunately, that means that, yeah, Bader's going to be on the outside looking in, feels like, a little bit more often than not.
If you're in a situation where you have Taylor and Stewart, if they keep hitting the way that they are, which I don't think that's guaranteed by any stretch of the imagination, especially DJ Stewart. We saw him and how he started the season. Everyone was calling for his head up until he hit that home run in the first Atlanta series. But yeah, I think that the Mets have some flexibility where if they want to move Bader, they can get something for him. I mean, you talk about Lou contenders that think that they'd see value in Bader. We saw that with the Yankees when they unexpectedly brought him in the 2022 season, traded Jordan Montgomery for him. So I think that Harrison Bader, there's stuff that he brings to the table, and honestly, his slash line right now might be like what they were expecting when they were bringing him into Queens, but I just think that, yeah, with the emergence of Stewart and Tyrone Taylor, I think it's kind of expected for Harrison Bader to kind of fluctuate in the lineup and his playing time, which I think Mendoza is doing the right thing by kind of riding the hot hand in some cases, but I think that Bader will have his opportunities here and there, and honestly, he can even stay, too, if he stays in this role as a pinch hitter against a lefty or a big defensive replacement late in games. There's a lot of value that Harrison Bader can provide, not only if he goes somewhere else, but if he stays with the Mets. He can be a big piece off the bench.
There's a lot of value. To circle back to this, there's a lot of value he can give elsewhere, and I don't know what the package Harrison Bader will command. Like, it's not going to be a Jordan Montgomery-type return anymore, but there is a postseason team out there, a legitimate contender, that will really value. I think the Yankees really valued from trading for him 2 years ago. Like, there is a team that's going to get more value out of him than the Mets will currently, and that's okay.
Yeah. One last thing I want to touch on before we shift gears is something that occurred during the Cardinals series that was really unfortunate to watch play out, mainly just because of just how freak of an accident this really was. Wilson Contreras, playing catcher, getting a fractured left arm after taking the bat near his upper arm wrist area from JD Martinez.
Why would JD Martinez do
that? He's now going to have to get surgery. They think it's about 6 to 8 weeks. He hopes to be back around the All-Star break. The end result of that was Martinez got catcher's interference and got first base.
Yeah, baby.
That's, yeah.
And that's what matters.
Listen, this was, I mean, the video is tough to watch where you see Contreras in as much pain as he is. Mm-hmm. I mean,
he said it was the most pain he's like ever felt.
Oh, it looked like it.
I mean, yeah, fracture to the arm. But, I mean, I don't know if you saw the John Boy video from today where he kind of did a comparison to where he's positioned as a catcher. So he lined up the shots at St. Louis from when he was on the Cubs and he was with St. Louis, and he's a lot closer to, like, the batter.
I wanted to get into this. Finish your point.
A lot closer to the batter with St. Louis, so that's probably a coaching thing where they're saying to Contreras, hey, get closer to the batter so you can frame pitches and, like, steal strikes so you can just get them when they cross the plate and, you know, get more strikes for the pitcher. So it's something they work on, but the drawback of it is that you're more susceptible for catcher's interference, but also something like that, which we like freak accidents that we don't see very often.
So not only did I see that John Boy video, I also saw AJ Pierzynski on foul territory. Shout out Will Town, who'll be working for them this summer. AJ Pierzynski, obviously a long-term catcher, talking about this fundamental change in catching the last few years. We've seen it with Trevino and the overall change in the analytics behind framing and getting the catchers closer to the plate, trying to steal strikes. We've seen it in having the catchers go down a knee and bring the ball up every time. And the one thing Pierzynski brought up is that the problem here is that they're just looking at the numbers without the baseball context of it, which is if you're 0.5 inches, you're an inch closer to the plate, you're going to steal more strikes. He said they're not factoring in adjusting to the batter, and he's like, that's more of an old-school baseball thing, but the catcher's used to adjust to, hey, where's the batter standing in the box? And he's like, you still have to adjust to that. So JD Martinez is a guy that stands way in the back of the batter's box.
Yeah.
And so if you're a catcher, you have to then adjust to that. So if you look at Contreras, he's right next to Martinez on that play. And so I think that's what's getting lost in the framing thing is you can't set up in the same spot for every single batter. So if you know that batter's at the back of the batter's box, I mean, it didn't even look like that long of a swing by J.D. Martinez, and Contreras is right in the swinging lane. So that's the thing that I think gets lost in the framing is that you still have to adjust to who's at the plate. And, like, obviously the catcher interferences have gone up every year notably, but I think the injuries could go up as well. So that's – you have to adjust to who's in the box or you're going to see more injuries like this. And that is – we talk about this analytics wave. I feel like sometimes they're not considering the actual, like, on-play effects of some of these adjustments.
Yeah, and a lot of the comments were saying, oh, J.D. Martinez is standing way too far back in the box. Like,
that's
his foot's,
right.
like, out of the
that's
box.
That's where he's always set up.
You're allowed to stand where you want. And it's Contreras' right to position himself where he wants to be either. It's just a shame that this was the end result, and now he's going to be out for a while. And he was hitting really well, too, so that's a big loss to a Cardinals.
A big double in that first game, right?
Yeah, a big loss to a Cardinals team that's, like, struggling out of the gate already. Look at how bad Paul Goldschmidt's been at the plate this year. It's crazy, and just a really tough moment for St. Louis and a tough moment for Contreras. He looked like he was in a lot of pain. Hopefully he recovers well and gets well soon.
It's really been crazy the amount of times I've seen catchers be whacked this year by a bat, whether that be some of them have been in the head, seeing them in
a
the
lot
arm.
Of them are on backswings too, which is why this was so surprising. It was in Martinez's swing lane.
Yeah. I don't know how many times, I think that's the first time in a while that I've seen, maybe ever, a batter catch them on the initial swing, especially on the wrist. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
No, it was like his forearm too. I mean, you see it with the glove like all the time with catcher's interference, but yeah, this one was completely different.
I will say on the Cardinals series, away from the Contreras injury, very impressed with how the Mets played, especially after
they needed that
Rays series was tough for them. Brandon Nimmo had about as big of a series as you can when you look at. I think you go 3 weeks back and having the Cardinals come back and tie it and going down 3-0 in those games, I think that might have been enough to knock the Mets out of the games and to immediately get punching back from Nimmo. The game-tying 3-run home run ends up being a huge 6-run inning, and then in the other game, the go-ahead solo shot that Nimmo gets. That is, I think, a huge statement, a huge spark by this Mets offense, and maybe a sign, I don't want to read into it too much, but that is some nice life from the Mets that maybe we weren't seeing earlier in the year.
No, it was, to me, great on all forces that came out of it. Because I know Nimmo has struggled, especially during the homestand. He was not hitting well at all. Alonso wasn't hitting that great either. He made some, at least, waves during this series as well. But for me, what the takeaway was just how much the bullpen looked better. They looked miserable against the Rays across the board. I don't know what it was. They finally shaped up, and it looked more well-rounded. Manaea was fine. Like, he was fine. There's nothing, I can't really say all that much about the starting pitching that we saw, because he's like, we're in the era of Mets pitchers now where they get like one strikeout and then they give up like two runs and that's their day, and that's fine. Starting pitching was fine, and now the real test is going up against Phillies and then Braves, or
Braves
and then
Phillies.
Swap
that around.
Braves and then Phillies, and it's just going to be miserable, I think, for this offense to go up against the Braves to start things off, and then to go up against the Phillies. Just like, I don't know.
Two teams that can pitch.
Missing Strider though.
They are missing Strider.
Can't say
I'm sure you're missing Strider as well.
Can't say I'm upset about that one. But. Yeah, it's, I believe Morton is going to pitch first, and then I believe it will be Freed the following day.
Not Chris Sale. Chris Sale pitched yesterday and pitched
dealt.
Really well.
Oh,
10
yeah.
against his former
six shutty against the Red Sox?
Yeah.
I mean, how big would Chris Sale, not even being like 2018 World Series form and certainly not prime White Sox form, but just an above-average arm? Like, this is a Braves rotation that they gave up on Soroka in the offseason. They traded him. They took a flyer on Chris Sale. I don't know what they expected from him, but how big would it be for the Braves to have Chris Sale be a legitimate piece in that rotation again that already has Morton, that already has Freed? You've now lost Strider, so that's a big blow to your rotation. Like, that come postseason, you're really going to miss him. To have Sale be dealing, and even if it's not prime Sale form, Like, that is something that could really help carry the Braves through another deep playoff
run.
He's
been healthy, too. He's been healthy.
He looks,
which
as,
was...
he looks and feels, I think he said he feels as good as he did, like, prior to the injuries bogged him down with the Red Sox. I think he's got a second life in him.
It'll be a good series to watch for probably the Braves fans, probably not for me, but we'll see how it goes.
The Mets held up well the first
optimism.
Series.
Some optimism. They won 2 out of 3 the first time in Atlanta.
Dan Bartels is all over that.
There's no need to be this negative, Maddie. It's the last
it's your
nose,
last
it's
show.
Your last Let's nosebleed.
Be
like,
optimistic.
You know what, guys?
Smile a little bit.
I'm smiling. You
Turn
know
that
what,
frown
you
upside
know
down.
Guys, you know what, guys? I hope they win both series. I hope they sweep. Anyway, let's move on. We've been talking about the Mets for a while. I want to take this across town because a couple of other things have occurred. If we're talking about freak accidents occurring with the Mets, there was a freak accident that occurred with one of the Yankees in particular. Aaron Judge, before Saturday...
Freak accident.
Never was ejected in his life. Not in his 9-year Major League Baseball career. Not in the 3 seasons he spent in the minors. Not in his 3 years at Fresno State. Never in his 4 years in high school. And never in Little League.
Wow.
And he was
a great Little League. Oh, the biggest sportsmanship guy back in Little League. One of the best.
He won every year. And yet he said 8 words on Saturday.
And they weren't even that bad.
They were not that bad. But
they were not.
But he said the key word, the trigger word, you.
Oh.
That's the one. But that's the one that gets the umpires. Like, you can say, like, oh, that call was wrong or whatever. But when you say, like, you're terrible or something like that, that's going to get the trigger going for the umpires to say, like, hey, you're gone.
And it was crazy because...
Stole that one from John Boy.
Well, because the whole scenario went down is, like, Judge had his back turned. It was, like, what, 5-3? He, like, mumbled it under his breath and just gets immediately, like... thrown because I haven't been BS all game, all that stuff that he said back to him.
You don't get to say I'm BS all game. It's so annoying.
I'm down on umpires, man.
It's so, I mean, you go back to the Hunter Wendelstedt situation a couple weeks ago where Boone literally says nothing and he's just, umpires are way too quick to just lay down the hammer. It's so annoying.
So one of your favorite people, ooh, John Heyman, actually wrote an article about this.
One of my all-time favorites.
One of your all-time favorites wrote an article about this exact topic, and he believes that at this point we should introduce the robo-ump.
Wow.
Now, it's been a controversial topic to discuss. You know, it's being tested, all of this stuff. Heyman's reasoning behind it was this has gotten so out of hand. The speed at which we're throwing nowadays, it's really very difficult for an umpire to tell the strike zone anymore. We're getting so many arguments.
Yeah.
Do you think it's time for the robo-ump?
I mean, I say no. I think that maybe, like, down the line, I think that's where it's headed. I think for now, I like where the, like, use of technology is going to go with the replay system for balls and strikes, where you're seeing it in AAA where a hitter can just tap their head and be like, no, I want to challenge that. And then you can see on the video board, that's, you'll see the strike zone and where the pitch was. And it's a fun, like, interactive thing for a fan, too. And it'll limit more ejections. I think umpires are just, like, feeling the pressure, like, a lot, and now more people are going to be on their case for certain things. But I don't know. The robo-ump thing, that's a far thing down the line, but I think this goes beyond that, where, like, umpires just need to grow up and there needs to be more accountability. Aaron Judge didn't do anything really to deserve an ejection, and when I've seen Judge play, it's not that instance was not different from anything I've seen where he's like, he says his piece and just walks away. And Boone was saying the other day that Judge wasn't, like, in a menacing position. He wasn't, like, getting in his face. He was walking back to the dugout.
Yeah, his back was turned.
It was ridiculous. Uncalled for.
I am a sucker for the content. Like, I do enjoy the ejection clips are funny.
No, I would miss
and like
ejection.
I think I would really miss a lot of these, like the John Boy breakdowns every time there's an ejection. They're awesome. I think it's the balance between, like, hey, these are really fun, but it's getting in the way of the game. So I don't know if it. Robo umps, I think we're getting closer to the fact that, like, becoming more of an inevitability than just, like, an idea that's being thrown out there, and you're seeing them use it in the minor leagues, and I think we're ramping up where, honestly, I think we could see it probably sooner than you even think. Like maybe
like
the next five years. I think in the next 5 years you could really see it get implemented. I think the other thing, and this is I think very unrealistic, but restructure the way that the umpire union works, whether that's give them more money and the trade-off is that they have to be held more accountable, because umpires are, you said it, Brian, they're
so protected.
They're so bad right now. They're so protected, and it's getting these, like the Hunter Wendell stat case, like it feels like it's getting worse every single year. And as funny as these clips are, no one wants to see Aaron Judge get ejected from a Yankee game. And I think it's less extreme when Boone gets ejected because he's a manager. That's one thing. But when we're ejecting players, like the Beltre clip, remember when he tells me
and he's dragging
circle,
the on-deck circle over?
Like, that's a hilarious clip. But no one wants to see the stars of the game get ejected. And so when these things happen, that's when it's like, all right, maybe say goodbye to the content and let's tighten this up.
Listen, my last piece I'll say on this is I can understand Aaron Boone having a quick hook where he has a little bit of a reputation of being not the nicest guy to the umpires. So if umpires like really like are looking to throw him out, like I understand that. But for Judge to have like that small of a leash over a few words that are said, like, come on, that doesn't make any sense to me.
I forget which one of us was talking about this over the past week, but I think the most frustrating part about all of it was when reporters asked to speak with him after the game, he was not available to comment.
Oh, umpires?
Yes.
Yeah, they just hide from everybody.
Which, even when Wendell Stat was available, his answers were awful, and he's like, he doubled down on it, and it's like, and there are no repercussions. And I think we heard the reports. I think Ken Rosenthal said, like, MLB is not happy about how Wendell Stat handled it and that there will be repercussions. And good, there should be. I don't know if media availability for the umpires even changes all that much. Yes, they'd have to answer for things more often, but if they're still protected by the union, I don't know how much that changes things.
I guess we'll find out, but in more positive news...
Back to baseball.
Back to the game.
The Yankees look good.
Yeah,
they look good.
The Yankees rolled through the Tigers. They're honestly just peeing on the grave of the Astros at this point. Like,
wow.
We talked.
The Astros are dead and buried, we're saying.
Let's talk about the show we did 2 weeks ago. We talked about the Astros, and we talked about how bad they were. And we initially didn't want to be like, listen, the Astros are pretty much done for the year at this point, because there's always that late push they make at some point, and then they're right back into it, and they look good. But they look horrific.
I did say, I made note that they dug themselves a big hole, and they were 10 games under 500 at the time. I think they were 9-19. And I think that, like, I don't know. I was like, this is a big hole that they dug themselves where they can maybe get better as the season goes on, but will it be enough? I don't know. And now it's just slowly getting worse for them. They're now 12-24. This is their last place in the AL West. They're worse than the Angels. Worse than the A's, who have gotten off to a better start than expected. But, yeah, they've dealt with injuries, and a lot of the guys that they've brought up just have not been able to get the job done. So the Astros, it's been really messy. So I don't know. This is a big surprise, but I'm not upset about it. Definitely not, especially with everything that's been going on.
Let's talk about...
Well, if we're moving on from the Astros, I will say, this is the first time that I'm actually, like, really worried about them. Because for a while, I was like, they're too good. You look at all the major arms that they have that are still hurt. I think four of their legitimate starting pieces are still on the IL. I know they just got Verlander back. But I don't know. We've seen it before. I think we've seen it to some extent with the Yankees, although I don't think they were ever this bad in the recent run, where it's like, there's so much talent, and you're waiting for them to piece it together. The Astros are good enough, even with the injuries they have in the rotation, that they shouldn't be this bad. And so there's a ton of season left. I don't want to get too ahead of myself. I am starting to get worried, though, that maybe this is the year the Astros just completely fall off and they don't make the playoffs again. You get to a certain point where if you keep kicking the rock down the road, you're not going to be able to get back at a certain point. I mean, getting swept by the Yankees, which could happen today. If they lose, they'll lose all 70 games against the Yankees this season. The Yankees
already
are
crazy.
The Yankees are crushing them. Soto's hitting .530 against them in the six games he's played against them this year. Like, this is the first time where I'm like, maybe this is what the Astros are going to end up being this year. They're going to be a massive disappointment.
I think a major test for them, too, was Verlander. When Verlander started, Verlander, who's been consistently good against the Yankees for most of his career.
He's been a Yankee killer.
He looked really, really bad. It was the most runs he's given up against New York in his entire career.
Wow.
Like,
really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I have more numbers for you. On the 27 swings on his fastballs, he had zero whiffs.
Hmm.
And he only had 6 total whiffs on 97 pitches, which is just, it really speaks to, I think, how well Yankees have been hitting across from Soto. Volpe has looked good. Rizzo got player of the week last week. Like,
I know.
I know.
Boys are starting to get going.
How about Judge? Judge is finding it. Like, he was off to a really tough start. You look at his numbers, like, going into, like, April 26th. He was hitting 178, and people were starting to have the conversation, like, oh, what's wrong with Aaron Judge?
He's fine now,
since April 27th, last 11 games, 385 average, 1284 OPS, 4 homers, 11 RBIs, 257 WRC+. He is dialed in.
Well, Brian, how about this? This is going to make your day. I'm going to call Will Town. Let's get Will Town on the pod.
We're ringing him too.
Yeah.
Will Talent, you're on Nosebleeds with Brian and Maddie.
Oh my goodness.
This is what we needed.
We love Brian and Maddie too.
This is the T-Mobile call to the bullpen.
Oh yeah, here we are.
Here we are.
Will,
funny enough, I'm sitting outside Yankee Stadium right now.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
Will, I don't know if you know this, but Brian was clamoring for you to be on this podcast this week. He really wanted a Brian, Maddie, Will pod, and I just laid the hammer down and said, no way.
I was hoping we'd make it work, man.
Wow, the first big move of the Orlando Ridge in disappointment.
Yeah. A big disappointment. The people were not pleased.
You know, Will, we were just talking about the Yankees in particular, and I was hearkening back to our conversation we had a la 2 weeks ago about how horrible the Astros look. And the Yankees have really not made it easier on them. And I know we said a while ago that it's, you know, a little difficult to say if the Astros are going to be out of it. Where do you think this situation is now after you just saw how it's been playing over the last couple games?
Well, you know, Maddie, it gets harder with each game. They're at a point where it's like, they need to start turning it around like tomorrow or yesterday. And each game, they just kind of dig themselves a little deeper. And the biggest thing that I've seen in the last two games, and we'll see what the case is tonight, is the bullpen. Oh man, their bullpen is just not getting it done. I mean, we could talk about the starters too. Verlander gives up the most amount of runs he's ever given up against the Yankees in his entire career, but I think overall it's just their pitching is just not together at all, and the Yankees offense is getting good reps from it. So for the Yankees, you know, let the good times roll. But for the Astros, I know it's only May, whatever, but, you know, time is running out. They need to figure it out because
time is running.
The AL West is starting to
it's getting late
separate themselves. The Mariners and the Rangers are starting to separate themselves from the pack up there. So I don't know. Houston's got a problem for sure.
I like what you did there. 9 straight wins for the Yankees against the Astros, dating back to last year.
Wow.
Who would have thought?
And
yeah, I know. That was a big stat. I saw that the other day. I was like, wow.
And tonight, Will, Stroman will be on the mound. And he has been, for me, what an interesting turn of events for the Yankees to find him, because he was like okay with the Mets. Then he rebounded after semi, and then now he's really found kind of a groove. What do you know, since you're there, what do you expect you're going to see from him tonight?
Well, I expect what I've seen, because I've seen him a lot for the games that I've covered. I think I've seen maybe 3 of his starts, and I'm going to see a 4th tonight. So one thing that was exactly why they got him is his ability to get ground balls. He's always getting ground balls. He has been walking a lot of guys recently, but he salvages that nicely with how efficient his sinker and changeup is. It's very effective. we all kind of knew going in that he was going to get hit around for, I would say, between 2 to 4 runs a start at the very least. In his first 2 starts, he was scoreless. But now we're seeing more of what they kind of signed up for, they being the Yankees, and it's still great. That's exactly the kind of pitcher that the Yankees needed. They needed a guy that was going to go out there and give you 33 starts, give you a sub-4 ERA, and most importantly, is able to make big pitches. He's 33 years old. He's an experienced veteran. He's played on a bunch of teams. You said the Mets, Matty, started with Toronto.
Cubs.
Yeah. Cubs.
Will, before we let you go, 505 first pitch tonight? Like, what's that about? Are you adjusting to it okay?
It's obviously worked a lot better than going out and getting Blake Snell. So I love it. I kind of expect that tonight.
I think we got a bad connection.
I would say he'll probably go 6 innings, give up 5 or 6 hits, maybe 2 runs, walk 2, strike out 6. There's Marcus Stroman's predicted final line for me. But I love watching him pitch. He's got a big flair to him as well.
Well, Will,
t-shirts
I don't know if you heard what I said.
He's awesome.
Will, do you have any final parting words to Maddie and Brian on their last ever nosebleeds?
Man.
I'm sorry, you broke up there.
Oh, let's try this again. Do you have me okay?
Oh, this is not working.
You know the FUV connection
is not great.
How am I
going to
ask
him
if he's going to do the YMCA tonight?
How are we doing now? Can you hear me now?
You're crystal clear.
Oh.
Do you have any final words to Maddie and Brian, their last ever nosebleeds?
Wow.
All I can say is that it's been a very memorable 3 years with the both of you guys. I love you guys. It's been
And we love
to
you.
See where you guys end up at. I know you guys are going to do big things, and I'm going to miss talking ball with you guys. But we'll always be in touch talking ball.
Oh, yeah.
Not, unfortunately, no longer with the production for WFUV Sports. But, hey, all good things must come to an end. Like I said, love you guys. Wish you guys all the best. And thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, hey, thanks for calling him, Will.
Thanks for calling
it
him,
was,
Will.
It was my pleasure.
Hey, love you, Will.
Love you, Will.
Take care. Enjoy the game. Bye. All right.
Bye,
bud.
He did not hear my question.
He did not hear your question.
The 5 o'clock
And that's okay. Let me answer for it. He's going to adjust fine because he's a professional and he adapts to change.
Mm-hmm.
He did not hear your question at all.
No, he didn't. But you know what? The Yankees are adjusting well. Like, Judge is adjusting well. Stanton's got 2 homers in the last 2 nights that are both 119 miles an hour, 120 miles an hour.
Hardest hit balls in the league. Brian, you know who did hear your question was me. So I don't know if you're rethinking your wish for this week's nosebleeds. But,
listen, you have a much easier path to hear my question. So I don't need it. Doesn't
I don't matter to you at all.
No.
Hey guys, we're all about friendship here today. One other person I did want to mention too. I've been very impressed with Verdugo over the last week. Has been just hitting so well. And I think one of the other things, and when I was doing a little research, I found out that since Gardner was last left fielder.
Great guy. My mom's favorite player.
Wow.
The Yankees have had 16 different players in left field.
Ooh.
That checks.
Verdugo finally looks like a nice, reliable guy that you got there going.
Someone that can stay there.
Mm. I really like, again, I don't know what the long-term plan is, just because you got Dominguez coming sooner rather than later. We might see him as a DH soon, which makes the Stanton conversation really interesting. And, you know, Spencer Jones is a guy that always gets talked about in Yankees land, and there's a lot of hype around him. That outfield can get crowded very quickly. I still think we're a while away from legitimate talks about moving Judge to first base. So I don't know what Verdugo's long-term role with the Yankees, if he's someone that they even think about re-signing, but I have loved everything that he's brought to this team. I think we overdo sometimes the 2009 comparisons, but doesn't he feel like this team's Swisher? Like,
kind
the Yankees
of.
Have been boring a little bit.
Some life
and he
in
injected
there.
Some much needed life into this team. The dog stuff, like, I don't know if that's going to get old. I think it has potential to, but right now it's not. And the fact that
it's fun because they're winning.
This team's having fun. Soto's having fun. Like, this team feels different, and not even from like a, you know, a personnel standpoint, on the field standpoint, but it's more so culturally and in the clubhouse. They feel different,
it
and that's
feels,
awesome.
It feels like a team that's brought the right pieces in, like Verdugo, Soto. They needed lefty bats, especially lefty outfield bats.
And they got two
that.
Good ones.
They have potentially Dominguez coming back, and yeah, I don't know where that leaves Stanton, because Stanton's been doing well, so it becomes a really tricky conversation.
We're gonna have a Carlos Mendoza Harrison Bader issue real soon
if he has some rehab games coming up. And then are we even talking about the fact that Garrett Cole is gonna come back in the middle of the
season?
I was
actually just about to say, like,
sorry.
Even
Luis
with
Hill get ready to learn bullpen.
And he was so good. He was so
I really
good
like
too.
Luis Hill.
He was so good. 3 hits or fewer in 6 of his 7 starts. Good for him. But like you mentioned, Garrett Cole supposed to return towards the end of the month. The bullpen is also supposed to get a couple of people back very soon as well. So it's just like you're doing so well right now, and now you're going to get more reinforcements. Like this is great for
this
you.
This is like the best I've felt about a Yankee team at this point in the season. I mean, 2022, like, yes.
The first through 2 months were pretty cool.
Yeah. But it's like the vibe of this team is just everything is clicking right now. They didn't panic and get a starter really in the offseason other than Stroman, which when Cole was hurt, I was like, oh, we should pivot and get Blake Snell. And now Blake Snell got like a 10 ERA through 3 starts and he's on the IL again. Like, ugh. So I think the Yankees really, like, so far, every like decision they made in the offseason is working to a T.
This season so far has surpassed all of my expectations. I think Will and Nick and I talked about in our season preview, like, what do we expect from this team? And especially without Cole, I was kind of willing to, like, okay, like, they don't need to blow us out of the water in the beginning of the year. Like, just don't completely collapse. Don't be the Blue Jays in the first, what the Blue Jays are right
don't
now. Don't be that.
Don't ever be the Blue Jays.
And they haven't been that. And so, like, what they've done so far this season without Garrett Cole, the fact that they haven't had Garrett Cole hasn't honestly even been that much of a storyline or a talking point. And it's because the rest of the team's playing so well that it's like, I honestly haven't spent that much time thinking about it. It'll be great to get Cole back at some point, and that's obviously going to make the team better. But it's not something where I'm like, oh, man, we need Garrett Cole back. Like, no, the team's doing fine right now, so, like, let's just keep riding.
The Yankees, like we mentioned earlier, are going to play in just an hour for us, much later for you when you hear this episode. But I want to take this last little time we have left together on this podcast to open the floor for a little bit.
Ooh.
There's a couple of things that have been going on in Major League Baseball recently.
Oh, sure.
So I think we could all go around and share something that we're seeing, something that happened, or something that we're excited about that you want to mention briefly in the last couple minutes we have here.
Can I go first?
Yeah. Sure, you can go first.
I would love to talk about Paul Skeens and Eli Keeler's Pittsburgh Pirates, because Paul Skeens is going to make his MLB debut, notably the boyfriend of Livy Dunn, which is very big for baseball.
I forgot about that when I was looking
it
up today.
I remembered when I saw her TikTok.
Oh.
It was big. And so they both found out after a nap, which is so cute. Pittsburgh to me, because obviously I was very dialed into them last year, given Eli Keeler's fandom and everything. And, you know, started hot last year, kind of tapered off. Felt like they had a great first 2 to 3 weeks of this season, and then maybe even die a little bit. I think they're a lot closer to competing than we realize. Like, I think next year could be a very legitimate potential wild card, maybe even NL Central run. I don't really know where the NL Central lies. Like, to me, I thought Cardinals had a chance to win that division. They are bottom of the barrel right now, right? So, like, I think the Pirates, you find out, as long as he pitches well and doesn't, like, blow up the way that Jack Leiter has so far in his early MLB career, if Skeens gives them a boost and they find a way into the wild card, hey, that's awesome. But I think next year, and this offseason particularly for the Pirates, is going to be interesting how they build the team around Skeens and the young talent that they have. Like, because keep in mind, like, O'Neill Cruz is young. Okay, Brian Hayes, I think, might be, if he's not entering his prime, is close to entering his young prime. And so there's a ton of young talent on this Pirates team. The pitching rotation doesn't get enough love. They've been a top 10 rotation in baseball so far this season. The Pirates are a lot closer than being a team that we're no longer talking about them as a feel-good story. We're going to be soon talking about them as a legitimate team that matters in the MLB. And that's awesome, because that is a team that I've always felt fondly about. And again, because they've kind of been down in their luck kind of franchise. man, it'd be awesome to see them get back to like excellence and see them in the postseason again.
You know, this takes me back to last year when they started off so well, and I got
and you hated them
completely
hate
dogpiled
fun.
On for saying they would fall off,
and you were right.
And then they did. So, and like, when's the last time a pitcher like this has gotten this kind of hype? Strasburg before then?
Honestly, that's a really really good comp.
Yeah,
because Strasburg got the call up pretty soon after he got drafted too, right? And he had that. And he had that awesome debut.
He did. So maybe that's what we have in store this weekend for Skeens.
Dial in.
My tidbit that I'll bring up around the league, I mean, I think it should be brought up. Luis Arraez gets traded to the Padres, which is just insane that the Marlins are packing it in. I think on May 3rd the trade happened. It's just like this team made the playoffs last year, and now Kim Ng left, so they're in like a weird position with their new president, and then they start 0-9, and on May 3rd, they're saying, yeah, we're unlikely to make the playoffs this year. Luis
Arraez,
our top commodity, we're going to send him to San Diego. And he had a very good first game with San Diego. So
that's a big effort.
The Padres got a big piece, and the Marlins are kind of back to being the laughingstock of the MLB after one really nice season.
You know what? They didn't do anything this offseason really to build off of a postseason run that I try to stay away from using the term lucky. Because if you make the postseason, it's 162 games. You have to earn your way into the postseason. But no one, I think, expected the Marlins to be there. And especially with the blow of losing Alcantara, like, I actually do think that the Marlins made a fair assessment this offseason of, hey, more often than not, more likely than not, we're not getting back to the postseason this year. It's still jarring to see them trade a guy like Arraez in early May.
I was surprised about that, honestly. Speaking of trades that just happened as well today, the Angels have acquired Luis Guillorme.
Oh, this is big.
And
that's gonna turn their season around.
And Anthony Rendon, 60-day IL.
Oh, that's he hates
who
baseball.
Could have seen that coming.
He despises playing baseball.
That wasn't what I was originally going to share, but you just made me think of things that happened today.
I'm glad I did.
I think my favorite thing over the past week was something that we talked about, we were very excited for, and then didn't watch, which I'm kind of upset that we didn't do.
But
I heard about it. Manoa made his first start for the Blue Jays since August 10th, and boy, did he show up. Oh, my goodness. I don't know how... it started off so well for him. Like, he went 3 innings, and I was like, oh, okay, like, this is fine. And then immediately just gave up 7 runs. Like,
good.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Hate him.
Another example, don't be like the Blue
Jays.
Don't be the Blue Jays. His slider was really bad. And he gave up, like, 2 home runs for that. And then, yeah, and John Schneider has said that he's going to stay there for a bit. So that's
good. No, keep pitching him.
Keep pitching Manoa. And you know what?
Guys, don't be the Blue Jays.
Don't be the Blue Jays. If you want to take anything away, you don't have to be them. I am, though, a little bit upset that Luis Guillorme is not going to be with the Braves when the Mets play him. I miss the guy.
He's in a better environment.
I miss his 150 batting average.
I'm sure you do. And his no batting gloves.
Fun. I mean,
he was weird when he shaved his beard. That was crazy.
Rendon's hitting better than him, but now he is swinging for the fences on the IL. So
let me just say this. I know we're strapped in time. So glad I could be on for your last episode. I love you guys. Love talking ball. It's been great. I'll cherish this forever.
Love you, man.
Yeah, man.
Love you
guys.
Both. This has been a pleasure.
Hasn't it?
A great way to go out, despite some mischaracterizations at the start.
I'm glad.
You know, it wasn't the crew we intended, but it's the crew we got.
It's certainly not the one Brian wanted.
At the end of the day,
that's baseball.
That's baseball. And there's no crying today. So anyway, thank you for listening to Nosebleeds. Thank you for listening for my entire time here. Thank you for listening for Brian's entire time here. Thank you to Grace McCarron, who is producing for us today. And special shout out to the entirety of everybody at WFUV that I've worked with on this show and others. But that'll do it for today. We're gonna retire, hang up our jerseys. It's been a pleasure. From Lou Orlando and Brian Raybax, I am Maddie Bomonti saying so long and enjoy the rest of your day.